ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Good morning. Welcome to AM. It's Tuesday, the 19th of March. I'm David Lipson, coming to you from Ngunnawal Country, Canberra. Australia's e-safety commissioner has put the big social media giants on notice. Protect Australians from terrorist and violent extremist material online or face stiff penalties, potentially worth tens of millions of dollars. Legal notices have been issued to Google, Meta, X, Telegram, WhatsApp and Reddit amid a surge in reports of harmful content being spread online. Here's Nick Grimm.
If someone wants to go looking for it, it's not that hard to find. Hateful and often illegal online material promoting harmful and extreme views, or even worse. And eSafety Commissioner Julie Inman-Grant says that kind of terrorist and violent extremist content, or TVEC as it's known, is being hosted by some of the world's most popular online platforms.
Now, Telegram is the number one ranked platform when it comes to the prevalence of TVEC material, as we call it. Google's YouTube is second. Twitter X comes in third, and then Meta-owned Facebook and Instagram round out the top fourth and fifth, respectively.
WhatsApp and Reddit are also on the list of the social media giants to receive legal notices from the eSafety Commissioner, giving the companies 49 days to answer a series of questions about what they're doing to put an end to extremist content on their platforms. The notices have been issued under powers granted by the Online Safety Act and could potentially result in stiff penalties.
So we want to just look much more deeply at the systems, processes, resources, innovation, technologies these companies are using to prevent and deter technology and violent extremism from being hosted, shared, and amplified on their platforms.
Yeah, what would you like to hear from these companies that would reassure you about their practices for dealing with this kind of extremist content?
Well, knowing that they actually have adequate resources in place, that when they have terrorist offenders that are spreading terror content on their platforms, that they are permanently banning them and preventing them from being recidivists or continuing to offend or spread terrorist content on their platforms.
These are the companies that have allowed extremism and even violent extremism to really proliferate on their networks and to be spread.
Dr. Josh Roos is an associate professor of politics at Deakin University with a focus on violent extremism. He believes it's time for a get-tough approach towards what he considers a lax attitude from the social media giants.
It's very difficult to police in terms of the content once it actually reaches Australian bedrooms, Australian offices and people on their mobile phones, but actually preventing those companies from operating here may well cut them out from significant profits and may force them to listen. If that can occur, then we've got a real potential to see some change.
There's warnings too that the platforms need to change the way their algorithms or system of ranking content promotes the worst kind of online material. Dr. Kaz Ross researches extremism, conspiracy theories and digital activism.
And the more engagement that you have with some material, whether you're angry or upset about it, the more eyeballs on that material, the more people respond to it and comment on it, even if it's to say how much they hate it, and that then feeds the algorithm more and more. And this is the problem with these algorithm-based services, that they'll give you more and more content. Even if you hate the content, if you respond to it in any way, you'll end up getting more and more of it.
A spokesperson for Facebook owner Meta told AM the company is currently reviewing the legal notice it's received, saying there is no place on Meta's platforms for terrorism, extremism, or any promotion of violence or hate, adding that the safety of users is a top priority and the company will continue to engage with the eSafety Commissioner on these important issues. Telegram says it's committed to protecting user privacy and human rights.
Nick Grimm with that report, and in a statement, Telegram says its terms of service explicitly forbid calls to violence and the spread of terrorist propaganda. AM also attempted to contact Google, WhatsApp, Reddit and Twitter X for comment. A trip to the supermarket is costing more than ever before, and it's prompted an unusual alliance in federal parliament in an attempt to ensure farmers and consumers get a better deal. The Greens will today introduce legislation that would force Coles and Woolworths to sell parts of their businesses if they abuse their market dominance. And that idea has the support of the Nationals. Political reporter Stephanie Boris with more.
It's not who you'd expect to be walking down the aisle together.
On this one, I think you'll find we might be going down the shopping aisle together rather than the wedding aisle.
The Nationals and Greens are ideologically opposed on most issues, but Nationals leader David Littleproud says when it comes to keeping the supermarkets in line, there's a strong agreement.
But it's something that I think has developed out of a pure necessity of what we've seen happen to farmers and to seen to consumers. And I congratulate the Greens. They've taken our hand on this.
Green Senator Nick McKim will today introduce legislation targeting the big supermarkets.
These are not radical proposals, and it's not a controversial proposition. And this is actually about making sure that we have enough competition in various sectors of our economy so that the corporates can't just price gouge and behave in an anti-competitive fashion.
Under the proposal, the Competition Watchdog, which is the Australian Competition and Consumer Commission, would be given divestiture powers. That means if the ACCC believed there'd been unlawful behaviour by the supermarket, it could apply for Coles or Woolworths to be broken up, such as to sell some of their stores. The final decision, though, would be made by the courts.
The existence of this power will no doubt focus the minds of the CEOs of big corporations in Australia and make them less likely to engage in price gouging behaviour.
The idea of divestiture powers has previously been recommended by the Competition Watchdog's former chair, Alan Fels. He says the laws have worked extremely well in the United States.
Been applied very successfully to oil, tobacco, to chemicals, in recent times to telephones, and in other countries. It's a basic element of a serious competition law.
And it's also something David Littleproud has been calling for, and he says the Greens legislation has merit.
Well, we're going to work with them. We think particularly around supermarkets, there's some technical aspects that need to be honed in on.
Government ministers have talked down the prospect of introducing such powers, instead saying they'll wait until the ACCC finalises its report into supermarkets, but the recommendations aren't due until next year. But as parties band together, pressure will grow on the government to act sooner in some capacity. Nick McKim says Australians can't wait any longer.
It is definitely time to move. I mean, Australia is an international outlier. It's simply time that we put the interests of people above corporate profiteering.
David Littleproud agrees.
Well, it's just transparency and fairness, and that's all farmers want, and I think that's all consumers want.
Coles and Woolworths have denied they've price gouged consumers. There are currently several inquiries into how they operate, but shoppers won't notice any changes at the checkout for now.
Stephanie Boris reporting there with Jake Evans. Electricity prices appear to be stabilising after years of record highs. The Australian Energy Regulator is today releasing its draft default market offer, showing price reductions in many jurisdictions, with prices dropping by as much as 7% for some households. Chris Bowen is the Minister for Energy and Climate Change, and he joins me now. Thanks for being with us. How many households and businesses will see electricity prices come down?
So the draft default market offer being released today by the energy regulator is an important moment. Now, the majority of electricity customers aren't on the offer, but it does set the benchmark. It's the cap for those who are on the default market offer, for those who have gone down that road. But for everybody else, it sends the benchmark for electricity companies as to how they need to remain competitive. And indeed, electricity companies need to compare their bills and their offers to the default market offer. So it really does provide that competitive tension. Now, obviously, everyone should acknowledge that the cost of living pressures that remain are real, and that electricity prices have been a very big part of that cost of living pressure in Australia and right around the world. Nevertheless, this is an encouraging sign. It shows that getting more renewables into the system has the positive effect we've been saying it would. It does show international pressure, some of the international pressure coming off. Of course, we pointed to international pressure when prices were going up, and just as equally, international pressure has helped. Our coal and gas caps, which we legislated last year, have played a big role. And also I and state ministers asked the energy regulator to prioritise the needs of consumers this year.
They see bills come down, those consumers?
Well, those on the default market offer certainly will in those jurisdictions where the energy regulator has put the figures out today.
How many?
Yes, well, as I said, majority of customers aren't on the default market offer, but it provides the benchmark for everyone, for every electricity bill. Every electricity bill has basically the competitive pressure, whether you're on the default market offer or not. Electricity companies take this very, very seriously. They put in submissions asking for, you know, fair enough, that's their job, I suppose, asking for higher increases. They haven't got those increases. We've got reductions today. It's the first time in quite a while, and that is an encouraging sign for Australian consumers and an encouraging sign that the plans that governments across the board, including the federal government, are putting in place are working.
So could prices continue to rise in some jurisdictions?
There's some very small rises in some jurisdictions compared to what we've had in the past. But the majority of jurisdictions are seeing reductions, particularly for small business, which is encouraging because small business has energy bills as a big part of their bill, particularly if you think about the local milk bar or delicatessen. Energy bills are going to play a big role. So for those in the Ausgrid network, big reductions. Are those in South Australia, big reductions. So that's an encouraging sign for those small businesses in particular.
So this is welcome news, but when will power bills come down by $275 as the Prime Minister repeatedly promised before the election?
Well, of course, that was the result of our modelling for 2025. We're still in 2024.
So you're committed to that?
And we have more policies to implement and we have more to go. I mean, you know, we have a lot more work to do. We have done a lot in the first 2 years. We have a huge amount left to do when it comes to energy reform, when it comes to rolling out renewables. You know, I'll have more to say in coming weeks about our rollout of renewables in the capacity investment scheme. There's been a huge amount of work going to that. We have a lot more work to do. This is an encouraging signpost, if you like, but it is far from a finishing post.
You reckon you can get there by 2025?
We're not giving up on reducing prices for consumers, and nor, David, are we giving up on the fact that renewables are the cheapest form of energy. Nuclear is the most expensive form of energy in the world at the moment. There will be a real choice at the next election between the cheapest form of energy and the most expensive.
Should Paul Keating meet with the Chinese Foreign Minister Wang Yi later this week?
Certainly, if he chooses to. I mean, this is a very important visit by the Chinese Foreign Minister. I think it reflects the efforts of the government and the efforts of the Chinese government, to be fair, to stabilise relations. There'll be important meetings with serving government ministers. It is entirely usual for a visiting foreign minister to seek out a former prime minister, particularly one who played the role he did in Australia finding security in Asia, not from Asia, as Paul Keating did all those years ago. He's deeply respected across Asia, and a meeting of that nature is, I think, singularly unremarkable.
Chris Bowen, thank you.
Great pleasure.
And Chris Bowen is the Minister for Energy and Climate Change. It's been a long night for Gulf of Carpentaria residents seeking shelter as Cyclone Megan crossed the coast. The cancellation of defence evacuation flights because of unsafe conditions ahead of the cyclone upset Borroloola residents, who say the plans were made too late. Meanwhile, the Category 3 system has been downgraded after moving inland, dumping huge rainfall in its wake. Annie Guest reports.
In his 30 years in the remote Northern Territory community of Borroloola, David Kieran has experienced several cyclones, but it didn't make it any easier as Cyclone Megan was passing just south of his town.
Yeah, well, the wind is a lot stronger than it was. The rivers are swollen. Yeah, some trees have fallen over. So, yeah, it's happening.
How are you feeling as it crosses over? Is it making you apprehensive? How is it?
It is getting stronger than the gust of wind right up there, and the trees are, you think they're made of rubber, really leaning over. Well, my concern is like someone else's house maybe a sheet of iron might blow somewhere and that might hit a window or something like that. Yeah, that's what sort of goes through your mind with these big gust of wind that's coming past the house.
David Kieran and his mum made a conscious decision to wait out the cyclone in their Gulf of Carpentaria community of Borroloola, about 1,000 kilometres southeast of Darwin. But many others had wanted to leave and were disappointed by the cancellation of defence evacuation flights, including Garawa Borroloola elder Keith Rory, who waited hours at the airstrip.
Everybody got a shock one day. The police and the manager said, look, it's been cancelled, the plane don't want to land here. So we had just to go home, you know. How could they say that to about 200-300 people? And, you know, and we were still in the middle of the heavy rain and wind.
What is your message then to the government, to the authorities?
Well, we're going to have a meeting sometime when everything's settled in. But my message, we've got a cyclone and you think you're going to hit Borroloola in the next one day or two. Make sure you let us know so that people can start evacuating or cross to the nearest town probably.
Both the NT and federal governments reject any suggestion of late action, with the Territory's chief minister saying the cyclone was closely monitored and the Commonwealth asserting it responded promptly to the NT's request for help. Meanwhile, damage assessments will get underway today, including by Ashley Garner, who runs accommodation for fishing enthusiasts on the isolated MacArthur River.
Some people unfortunately decided to stay behind. So the problem is some people are in caravans and stuff and they're in the campground, so which is quite concerning because the ground's already very wet. So, you know, it won't take a lot of wind for big trees to start falling over and things like that.
He's planning to charter a helicopter to the remote location east of Borroloola as all roads out of the town are flooded.
Any guest there? There are concerns some women are being denied access to pain relief during childbirth. The ABC's Birth Project heard from more than 4,000 women around the country about their experiences having a baby. Some who couldn't access timely pain relief have been left deeply traumatised. Alison Branley with the story.
Mama. Mama.
Dog.
For Samantha Burgess, the birth of her first child, Peggy, was meant to be a happy event. Instead, it broke her physically and emotionally.
It feels like I lost a part of myself when I gave birth.
She says during labour, medical staff repeatedly disregarded or delayed her repeated requests for pain relief, including an epidural, which numbs the lower body.
It was sort of just passed off the whole time and like she did not want to give it to me.
Samantha Burgess says she ultimately had the procedure, but the powerlessness she experienced over hours has had a profound impact.
It has been pretty hard. I've had postpartum rage and depression, and I've really taken it out on Peggy. I've had to take antidepressants.
She's one of 4,000 women who contacted the ABC as part of its birth project, which looked at the experience of mothers having babies. Dozens told her hospitals delayed or denied them pain relief, leaving them traumatised. Globally, Australia's epidural rate is 46%, lower than France at 85%, but higher than the UK, where it's about 31%.
Pain is very individual, and it is whatever the person says that it is.
Professor Hannah Darlin is a midwife and academic at the University of Western Sydney. She studied the birth experience of more than 6,000 women and says access to pain relief was raised regularly, with 172 women saying they'd want more pain medication for their next delivery.
When birth is either fearful or the baby may be in a difficult position or it's taking a very long time, then that pain can be problematic and women do need extra support.
Figures show 80% of women giving birth have some form of pain relief. It includes gas, epidural or spinal blocks and opioid medications. 20% have no pain relief at all, but it's unclear how much is by choice. Professor Darlin says epidural patients need more nursing and staff shortages can be a problem.
Sometimes there are competing cesareans going on, there are emergencies, there are anaesthetists who have to come from other places. So sometimes there is a delay.
Dr. Nicole Sheridan chairs the Australian College of Anaesthetists Obstetric Group.
With advancing epidural medicine delivery techniques, so we're using more and more dilute local anaesthetic solutions and we're delivering it in a different way.
She says there are myths among midwives about epidurals, including that it can be too late or prevent pushing, which can deter staff from suggesting them.
The common ones that I hear are that you're more likely to need a cesarean section, which is not true. With good antenatal education, we can hopefully dispel some of these myths.
State governments and hospitals told the ABC they're consulting widely and researching women's pain in a bid to improve services. Samantha received an apology from the hospital. She'd like to see more staff education as well.
Alison Branley there. That is AM for today. Thanks for your company. I'm David Lipson.
Hi, I'm Sam Hawley, host of the ABC News Daily podcast. The government's looking to shake up the aged care sector to make it much more user pays, particularly if you're a wealthy baby boomer. Today, investigative journalist Anne Connolly on what that means for the family inheritance. Look for the ABC News Daily podcast on the ABC Listen app.